the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Welcome to the program. That's right. It is my favorite show, The Big Show, another edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing program. It's your source, I believe, for the best in money advice, and we do it every single day right here for you. Brain Trust standing by, ready to talk with you. Professor Rick Plum here with me, Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. We're going to get started this hour on a topic, it's known as value averaging. Okay, now don't run away screaming, saying this sounds too complicated, but we're going to tell you what it means, first of all. But we're also going to tell you how it can be a big part of your financial plan. What do you expect out of the market this year? Or what did you expect last year? What rate of return would you most want to see? There's a good reason we're asking that. We're going to tell you what that reason is coming up, and it all has to do with value averaging, of course. Now, as always, phone lines open. All of them are open right now, in fact, so you give us a call, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Brain Trust standing by. You can also email us via wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Ask your question, type it in, and we'll get it here in the studio. You got to send it to us, though. Wealthed.com is your source for all the topics we talk about on this show. Just look for the Find Your Answer link there near the top of the page. Once again, Professor Plum is here with me. If you want to get in touch with the professor or anyone here at Lucia Capital Group, the number off the air, 800-644-1150. You can talk to an advisor, get your bucket strategy set up. Your financial plan, of course, should be tailored to suit your individual needs and goals, and that is why you need to speak with a Brain Trust advisor. Oh, mommy. Sorry. They'll devise a plan that works for you. No two situations are ever alike, all right? Find out what the advisors at Lucia Capital Group can do for you. 800-644-1150. That's the number off the air. And the important number right now on the air, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. So I throw a term out there, Professor Plum, like value averaging. Sounds like one of those nerdy sort of propeller head terms that, you know, they throw around in these economics classes and things like that. But really, value averaging, the concept is, I believe, wonderful. Why don't you explain it just very quickly how it works?
Well, just before I explain it very quickly, what is it that we do a lot on this show to try to help people become better investors? We're trying to control you, the investor. Value averaging is a concept of identifying when you're ahead of where you should be, and instead of being greedy, take some profits. And when you're below where you should be, instead of being fearful and selling, maybe even actually buying at that time. But it takes a strategy ahead of time to be able to work the side, this side of the equation. You have to understand where you expect to be. Now, just saying I expect to be rich isn't good enough. If you have to put a barometer on it, you have to put a expectation of return on your portfolio, or at least within the subsets of your portfolio, about how you're going to go about doing this, because it's all about controlling you. And we get giddy with joy when the market's going up, and we want to keep buying when the market's already set in really good records and putting up good returns and everything. That's probably not when you should be buying. And then on market days like, several that we've had this year so far, we've gone down, 10-15% on the market so far? Yeah, now's the time to get out, right? No, now's not the time to
you
get
see,
out.
Yeah.
Now's the time to get in, potentially. I
yes.
don't know for a fact, but,
That's a good point. So ask anybody, even rank amateurs, and you say, what's a good investing philosophy? And they might say,
buy low, sell high.
Most basic ones is buy low, sell high. That's what everybody tries to get you to do. In fact, that's what all these market timing strategies say they can do for you. Buy low, sell high. Obviously, that's what you want to do. But when you put emotion into it, what you just described is what most people do. The exact opposite.
We don't buy
high,
low.
Sell low. They do the exact opposite of what they're supposed to do, which is where this whole idea of value averaging comes in, because it, in many ways, if you follow it, forces you to at least buy
lower,
and
but maybe not the lowest.
No, wait. Yes, yeah. Sell higher.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I see. Here I go again.
You were working on the upside, but saying the downside.
That's what I meant. Yes, but it forces you to do what you're supposed to do,
what you should be doing. Unfortunately, we are not rational people. We are fearful people and we are greedy people. We don't buy when the market's down. We're scared to death when the market's down. We don't sell when the market's up. We can't wait to get in when the market's on fire. But we wait until the market's on fire to get in. Those are the wrong ways to invest for the long term. Now, you may make some money in the very short run, or you may actually lose some money in the short run when you're doing what we're talking about. Because we're not doing market timing. This is not necessarily market timing. Market timing are the systems that say, now is a good time to get in because it's going to go up. Or now is a good time to get out because it's going to go down. That's market timing. What value averaging is saying, you're already up. You're up more than you expected to be. Now's a good time to take some profits off the table. Now, does that mean that it's not going to go up more? No, it could very well go up again. That's why you don't take it all off the table. This is not an all or nothing proposition. This isn't a matter of all in, all out. This is, you thought you were going to do 8 to 10%, pick your number, whatever your barometer number is on your portfolio, and you're up, like 2013, you're up 30%, 25%, whatever the number your portfolio was up. If you think that's a realistic number that's going to happen each and every year, we need to have a talk about expectations. But most people would rationally expect between an 8 and 10% return on an ongoing historical, you know, rate of return basis. And when you're up 25, 30, it can't continue forever. Take some off. Not all of it. Take some of it off. The excess return. Easy math. Put $100,000 in. We expect a 10% rate of return. That's just a made-up number. So at the end of a year or so, we should be up $110,000. $100,000 in, 10% growth, $110,000. With a year like 2013, you're probably up to 125, 128 or some other number. Take that extra 15 to 18,000 over and above where you thought you would be and pull it off the table and set it off to the side.
In other words, put it in safety, somewhere where it can't go down.
Put it in something that is available to you at another time. Because what is the one thing, now we can't guarantee anything in this world, but what is the one thing we're pretty sure is going to happen in the market? It's going to go up more than expected. It's going to go down more than expected. On any given day, it's going to be higher or lower than we thought it was going to be. It's going to be all over. Volatility. And when the market is way higher than expected, it could go up again. And it might. But it could also come down. And what we've seen over long periods of time is whenever the market's pushing a very high rate of return for a while, it tends to give it back. And whenever it's been pushing a very low rate of return for a while, it tends to make it up. So what we're trying to do is work those long-term rates of return into your favor. Take your greed and fear out of it. And when the market's a lot higher than expected, take the profit, the excess, not all of it, the excess profit off the table. And when the market's lower than expected, like the first part of 2016, last part of 2015, maybe start feeding back in. Now, that's a much harder proposition to deal with than selling on the top side. Now, the problem is once you start doing this, it may hurt your overall short-term returns because, like I said, this is not market timing. You go back to the 90s. If you were doing this in the 90s, 96, you did some value averaging, pulled some money off the top because 96 was a good year. 97, another good year, you pulled some money off the top. 98, another good year, you pulled some money off the top. Finally, you're thinking, why the heck am I selling?
I could have left everything in and had way more money, than I have now.
This money that's sitting on the sidelines that I value averaged off hasn't earned a whole lot of money. Back then, you could earn 5 or 6% in a bank account. But the market was just going crazy. And you got people on the news telling you, this is the new paradigm, the new safety, the QQQs are this. You know, and you abandon your strategy about 1999, and then the market turns. Unfortunately, we have a hard time staying rational longer than the market stays irrational. So once you start, you got to stay with it. But value averaging is just a concept of saying, I know where I am, I know where I expect to be. Let's take advantage or protect against the things that we do not have control over.
Now, in your example, Professor Plum, somebody who value averaged all the way through and stuck with it, let's say, they stuck with a strategy. They've got 4 years worth, call it, 3-4 years worth of money that they've taken off the top and put into some kind of safe instrument that's not going to lose money. 2000 happens, 2001. Now all of a sudden they're below where they expected to be. How are they going to refill and get back to where they're get and bring themselves back up immediately to where they should have been?
Well, not necessarily immediately, but they're going to push that money from the safety side when the market dropped 30-40%. they buy back in. If it drops again, you try to find some more money to buy back in. And you force it to where you thought it should be. If I was at 100, I thought I'd be at 110, 120, 130, 140, and then it dropped. You know, so I've been taking money off the table all along. I got $50,000 or $60,000 sitting, $70,000 sitting in cash. The 170 or 150 dropped to 100, baby. You know, it dropped by 33%. I buy back in. If it drops again, I try to buy back in. Force, this is the long-term money. I'm not talking about your bucket number one or your bucket number two. I'm talking about your long-term money and being able to manage it to your expectations.
Yeah, and the reason you do that is because it's, again, forcing you to buy low and sell high. And of course, when the market recovers, as it always does, at least historically,
so far,
you're holding on to a bunch of cheaper shares, which allows you to grow even more. Okay, potentially. 877-PLANNER, we got more to say, but anything that's on your mind, you call now. Lines are open. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Here for you every day. We got lines open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We'll get to some of your emails in just a moment. I know we had a couple of emails on the topic that we're talking about right now, which has to do with value averaging. But again, 877-PLANNER, our number, wealthed.com, our website. You go to the Find Your Answer link, and we will get to some of those emails in just a little bit. So when we talk about something like value averaging, people just tuning in, not, you know, what we're saying is it's a strategy to force you to sort of buy on the higher side, mm-hmm. and sell on the lower side, which sounds to some people like market timing. You just explained why it isn't. But this is, in a manner of speaking, doing a kind of rebalancing, is it not?
Well, it
in a way, not more, in the traditional way, though.
It's not rebalancing so much as within a strategic asset portfolio,
right,
where you've got 20%, 40%, 60%. That's a growth portfolio, an asset allocation that you're trying to maintain. And rebalancing is a little bit different. This is across large sections. Rebalancing deals with a growth portfolio where you've got different sectors of the market, different sectors of investors that you want to stay within a certain balance in that particular area. Value averaging means pulling money completely out of a growth investment, putting it into safety, and or pulling it out of safety and putting it into growth. Mm-hmm. And so it's there's no set percentage that you want to maintain ahead of time. Rebalancing is maintaining a certain percentage of a portfolio in a certain allocation. Rebalancing is just trying to avoid, you know, large downturns after a large run-up, or
yeah,
maybe take advantage. So, and we are going off the premise that over time, the market does go up, and the market will recover. So far in history, we've never had a drastic market downturn that we haven't recovered from. Now, I don't know what the future holds, but we've always recovered. Now, it does take time. Now, the other side of it is you could be rebalancing, or not rebalancing, you could be value averaging depending upon when it happens, especially if you're rebalancing on the upside where you're ahead of the game. It may be that you're rebalancing and refilling a previous bucket that you've been spending down to lengthen out your time horizon in. Rather than looking to find a time when it's appropriate to put it back in, you're just looking for an appropriate time to get out of the market. You know, one of the issues a lot of people have is when they're investing for growth is not necessarily just when to get in, but when to get out. Well, when's the best time to get out? Well, when you're made more money than you thought you were going to make. That's a reasonable time to get out. And if you've got your first bucket, which is the safer bucket, the low volatility bucket that you're using to create a distribution so that you can live off of, when the long-term growth bucket, which you've created a long-term time horizon for, the reason you do a long-term time horizon is to hopefully avoid the downturns that could happen next week, or we're in the middle of it, so that you can have enough time for that market to recover. We've never had a market that went down and didn't recover yet. Now, I don't know what it's going to be in the future. But if it happens where you recover or you actually go up very quickly in the early years, there's no problem taking it off and refilling your earlier buckets right at that point. So you're not looking to someday get back in. You're looking to make sure that you have a long enough time horizon so that the inevitable market downturn, you've got plenty of safe money to withstand that downturn, market downturn. So it's all, there's lots of things going on. And that's why this is not in exact science. This is not something that you can basically put into a computer and
yeah,
say, do it just automatically. It is not that type of an issue. This is a strategic planning aspect that needs to be discussed and decided upon rather than just automatically triggered. And so we want to look at it from lots of different angles. One of the angles is, what's it going to cost me to do so? And unfortunately, a lot of people will bring up the idea that you don't want to do this value averaging because of taxes. Taxes are a drain on the portfolio. And that is true. But taxes, hopefully, are unavoidable. You're going to spend this money at some point in the next 20, 30, 40 years. Are you not? The only way you don't pay taxes on it, there's two ways to not pay taxes on this. On the gains, these excess gains that you've achieved, potentially achieved, I should say. I know we're not guaranteeing anything. There's two ways to avoid the taxes. One is to die, okay? Fair and simple. You die, the assets go up in value, then you get a step up in basis. Now, we're only talking about, obviously, personal investments, not IRA investments, because that's taxable no matter what. But you either avoid the gain by dying, or you avoid the gain by staying in it too long and watching it drop back down to where you were before, or less than you were before, and now you don't have any gains to pay any taxes on. In many respects, and we've seen this happen several times, where paying some taxes on gains that you didn't think you would have, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, if like in our example, 100,000 grows to 110, we think that's what it's going to do. We hope that's what it's going to do. That's our estimate of what it's going to do. But in reality, like a year like 2013, it grew to 125. So I sell off $15,000. I still have my 110 in the market, where I thought I wanted to be in the first place. Even if I sold off in short-term capital gains, I probably still have $10,000 of excess profit sitting in the bank that I didn't expect to have in the first place.
Yeah, but now you could be pushed into a higher tax bracket, could you not, with your capital gains taxes that you've now got to pay that you didn't think you'd have to?
It's excess, almost like free money to begin with. And there is no 100% tax bracket. And especially if we can work with a long-term capital gain, preferential tax treatment and things, I would much rather pay taxes on a gain that I have achieved up to this point than to not pay taxes on it and watch that gain disappear. Unfortunately, back in 2013, we saw this happening because the movement happened pretty quick in 2013 when the market went up. And we saw people that were invested, but they were invested for less than a year. This also happened in 2011 before the downturn in 2010 to 2011. We saw people that the market went up 15, 20, 30% in a relatively short period of time. Discussion was had, should we be pulling some money off the table? No, I want to wait 3 months to avoid the short-term capital gain so that I can get to a long-term capital gain. And what happened in the next 3 months?
Well, you had no gain.
They avoided the gain because there was no gain. The market took it back. And so they didn't have to pay the taxes, true. They also didn't have the gains. They didn't have any money sitting on the side even after paying the taxes. So taxes are always a consideration, but they should not be the driving force behind not taking profit. Taking profit, paying some taxes is not the worst thing. Losing that profit, potentially, now, like I said before, this is not market timing. It could go up more. And so what we're missing out on is the potential opportunity of it going up a lot more or any more. And we're not saying that it's not going to go up more. We just know that typically, at some point, when the market's up a lot more than historical averages, it tends to revert back to the mean. And the only way a market that's way ahead of the game can revert back to the mean is by going
down. Yeah.
We're just trying to avoid the down. All of this is triggering around how do we avoid losing money?
What you're
doing
is, as we
learned a couple days ago, a good offense is a great defense.
In theory, and that's sort of what we go on. What you're doing is taking...
Nothing guarantees returns, though.
Oh,
nothing
exactly.
Guarantees anything.
Yeah, we should tell you that. What you're doing is you're taking your gains less, whatever it costs you in taxes. But at least your gain is still there.
And the idea is to try to manage it, to reduce those taxes as much as possible. Use long-term capital gains if you can get to it and things of that nature. Tax harvest losses at times to help offset the gains and do those things. This takes work. It's not just a set it and forget it. Now, you could set it and forget it for 15, 20 years and probably be okay. I mean, just the same.
There are people who rode the NASDAQ all the way up 15, 16, 17 years ago and didn't want to sell off because they were afraid of paying capital gains taxes. They still aren't anywhere near where they were. Just saying. All right, 877-PLANNER, our number. We'll get to some emails, some phone calls. Lines are open right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Coming right back. Don't go away.
Brain Trust standing by, ready to ask, you know, you can ask. We're standing by, ready to answer your questions right here on the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, if you've got some questions, lines are open, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Talking to you about your money right here on the program. Other places to talk to you about your money, there are going to be some workshops coming up here, and I'll tell you about them right now. The next one is happening not too long from now. In fact, it's really close, actually. Las Vegas, that'll be Saturday morning, February 20th. The 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops brought to you by Lucia Capital Group. Learn about some of these strategies that we're talking about here. These are more for income strategies, but any questions that you have, you bring them to the workshops and you ask them as well. Learn all about this stuff. February 20th in Las Vegas, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com, our website, and sign up. It's all free. After that, February 27th, Seattle, Washington, and then Saturday, March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. So again, Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. There will be more after that throughout March and April. You go to wealthed.com to find out where and when. And sign up right there. Again, wealthed.com. Oh, and you're going to meet Professor Plum, too. And Terry Keyes.
Don't scare him away.
No, I think they figure you're probably an okay person. After all these years, 20-something years we've been doing this show, 23 now, I guess, coming up on 23, people have gradually learned to trust that
tolerate
you're not going to bite their you're not going to bite their heads off, necessarily. No, you won't do that. That's never happened. Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about this strategy, this value averaging strategy. It's an important thing to do. It's not for everybody, Professor Plum.
And it's not a mandatory issue. Unlike a strategy like a bucket strategy for a retiree, which I think should be employed by any retiree that needs to take a distribution from the portfolio, rebalancing is not something that is required. One of the reasons we do a bucket strategy is to build in a long-term time horizon for the growth, the potentially growth-oriented assets. Now, just because it's never not happened in the past doesn't mean that a 15, 20-year time horizon will guarantee a return, but it gives you a much better chance. With value averaging, we're just trying to find a way to potentially enhance what you're doing and maybe make you feel better and stop being, you know, look at things differently instead of panicking when the market goes down. Realize that that may actually create an opportunity. So we're just trying to, you know,
right,
basically work on the behavioral finance side of the individual that's trying to overall manage the money.
Okay, so the concept again is that if you're above where you expected to be at a certain point, whatever that point happens to be, you take some off the top, you sell those gains, you put those off into some kind of safe environment until such time as the market goes down and you need to put back in. So,
but
now,
but you don't necessarily have to go all that way. I mean, one of the biggest questions we have is, when is the best time? We talked about it before. When is the best time to get out of the market? Well, the reality is the best time to get out of the market is when you have a higher than expected return. And so if you are in a position where you never need to worry about getting out of the market, you've got more money from other sources that you're, so this money really truly just is not for you, it's for successive generations, then it really doesn't matter. Because whether it goes up or goes down, it doesn't affect you and won't affect you in any way, shape, or form. But if you have an account over here that you're living off of and it's slowly depleting over here and you're looking to refill it at some point in the future, when do you refill it? Does it have to be on a specific date? No, it's whenever is appropriate, whenever is opportunistic.
Exactly.
And we need to identify those opportunities.
Now, I'm going to ask you in a little while. I'm going to take a couple of calls. I'm going to ask you in a little while about when you buy back in during the down times of the market, which is what the other side of value averaging is. I want to ask you about, do you dollar cost average your way in? Do you do this over, you know, do you do this all at once? Because you do have some money to put in. We'll talk about that. In fact, Bill had a good email on these market strategies, talking about market timing. So we'll get to that as well. But I do want to take some calls. 877-PLANNER. Once again, any question that you have, we got some folks on hold. Any money question you have, comment, concern, you give us a call and we will talk to you right here and answer those questions, address those comments and concerns. Let's see. Next is Harvey in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Harvey.
How you doing there?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have a text question. I'm trying to get to that magical 118,000 so I can get all my deductions.
Okay.
But I noticed that my wife, well, I'm 54, so I maxed out my TSP. I put 24,000 in that. But I found out my wife only put 3,000 in her 403B at work. So can I put the difference in a traditional IRA up to the max that I can put in a traditional IRA?
Nope. Those are two.
Boy, that was a good question, though, Harvey.
Those are two separate worlds. The 403B, the 403B can only be funded through salary deferral, money that they take out of her paycheck. And unfortunately, if she doesn't take it out of her paycheck, she can't just write a check to the 403B company and say, here's, I'm making up the difference. It doesn't, unfortunately, work that way. And
no,
the other side.
What I'm saying
is, go ahead.
No, what I'm saying was, because if she didn't have a defined benefit plan, we could put what she could put up to 5,000, or is it 6,500? No.
It's 5,500 if you're under 50. Are you under?
Yeah, I'm the 50.
You are 50, so it's 6,500. If she's under 50, it's 5,500.
So 5,500. So since she's under 50, she can't. Well, even still, because
she can,
she's have a defined benefit plan, she can't put any money in a traditional or conventional IRA.
Well, you can put the money in.
Yeah, that was
you
the question.
You just can't deduct it. And so.
Oh, you can't deduct it. Oh,
but
okay,
and so
gotcha.
If I can't get the deduction for it, then I would much rather do a Roth IRA where I'm still not getting the deduction, but at least I have the potential for tax-free in the future, whereas any earnings inside of a traditional IRA are going to be taxable. The problem is because she didn't put in more than 3,000, it didn't bring your adjusted gross income down enough to be able to do a traditional IRA that's deductible on top of that. And the 118, just getting to 118 doesn't help you a lot. That's the top end of the phase out. At 118, you're still phased out. You've got to get down lots way below the 118 to be able to have, if you are part of a retirement plan at work, you have a 401k, she not only has a defined benefit plan, but she has a 403B. Either one of them makes you part of this phase out at the 118 level, 98 to 118. You got to get way down there.
You got to get to 98 or below, right?
You got to drop another 20, and that's not going to happen.
No.
So do Roths.
I think I'd rather pay Uncle Sam and drop down 20,000 more. Okay. It sucks when you... When you make money, you got to
Given the choice, though, I'll take the money.
Yeah, me too.
Do the Roth IRA.
Okay, that's what I would do. All right, thank you.
Harvey, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. All right.
Okay, no problem.
And the fact that he's at 118, 120, whatever the number is, he'd have to drop, you know, maybe 45,000 of deductions to get out of the 25% bracket. So for 2016 going forward, have your wife increase her 403B.
Well, okay, yeah. So what he was asking was not could he add more to the 403B after, you know, because she only put in $3,000. She could have put in another 2,500.
Well, she's under 50, so she could put another 15 in.
At $3,000?
She put three. Her max is 18. 403B maximum is 18,000 if you're under 50.
Oh, right. Yeah. Another 50. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm coming in a different way. But rather than refill the 403B, what he was saying was, can I take that excess and put it? He was asking about putting it into a traditional IRA. What's stopping him from doing that is the
IRS?
the income limits.
Well, not only the income limits. Well, yeah, the income limits, because it's not a 403B contribution anymore. It's an IRA contribution. IRA contributions are limited to $5,500, $6,500, depending upon age. Mm-hmm. And they're limited on the deductibility side by your adjusted gross income. He was saying he was getting his adjusted gross income down to $118,000. That's the very top of the phase out for somebody who has a retirement plan at work.
Which means the door is still locked at that point.
The door is slammed shut all the way. If you get it down to $117,900, you're still pretty much phased out of it. You can't do it. To get the ability to put in the full $5,500, $6,500, depending upon how old you are, you'd have to drop your income all the way down to $98,000, drop another $20,000 off the top. And that is not from deductions like your itemized deductions or personal exemptions. That's later in the tax reform.
That's a larger 403B or 401K contribution that will get that down.
This is what they call above the line deductions, something that it reduces your adjusted gross income. Your 401K, 403Bs reduce your adjusted gross income. Your health insurance premiums, things that you have taken out of your paycheck on a pre-tax basis, reduce your adjusted gross income. That's what's used to then determine whether or not you're eligible for a deductible IRA, a Roth IRA, the child tax credit, and all these other things. So above the line deductions are good.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned phase outs very quickly before the break. You mentioned phase outs. When you say that, starting at, say, $98,000, once you start to get above that, you lose gradually your ability to deduct, put money in and deduct in a traditional IRA. And once you hit $118,000 now,
yes,
$118,000, you lose it completely.
Yeah. And so you can still contribute to a traditional IRA. As long as you are working and you're under required minimum distribution age, you can contribute to a traditional IRA. That's not the question. The question is, if I make a contribution to a traditional IRA, will I be able to deduct that contribution?
And if you can't,
then why do it?
Currently, yeah, why do
other
it?
Other than Roth backdoor Roth, but if I can't do the Roth backdoor, or I don't need to and I can go straight to the Roth, do the Roth IRA.
Yep. So again, Harvey, thank you for asking that question. It's a great question, and I hope we helped you out. Okay, Shiraz in Dallas, if I'm saying that right, hang on. You have a question. We're going to get to that when we come back. Still two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum are coming right back. Okay, there we go. Welcome back to the program. Oh, this is the...
Yeah.
Oh. This is the techno version. Not techno. I shouldn't say that. There it is.
Whoa.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That's
really good. I forgot who... Andy told me who did this.
I would not even hazard a guess.
That's pretty good. All right. Anyway, welcome back to the show. We, if we play more than another couple seconds, we have,
we'll have to pay somebody. We're
pay
too cheap.
We've got to pay ASCAP for it. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I'm
that
too
kind
cheap.
Of, though. All right. Anyway, stick around for more. We will get to some more of your emails. I said Bill and others have emailed us on the topic that we were talking about, which had to do with both value averaging and dollar cost averaging. We'll get to those very quickly, but I do want to get to a few more calls before the top of the hour. Shiraz is up next in Dallas, Texas. Hello, Shiraz.
I have a question about Social Security.
Okay.
My question is, I'm eligible for Social Security right now. I'm 64 years old right now, and I'll be 65 in May. Will there be a benefit if I wait till May to get my benefits, or should I apply for it now?
Well, there's going to be a benefit. There's an increase in the benefit for every month that you wait between now and 65. There's nothing outrageously special about 65 anymore. Your full retirement age is 66. But it's just a matter of when do you need to take it? When do you want to take it? Do you want it to grow? Do you want the money? Do you have anybody else that may want to, you know, be looking at taking his widow's benefit from you many, 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 many years in the future?
Yeah, okay.
Are you working?
My wife is a teacher. I am not. I just sold my business. I'm retired now.
Oh, good. Okay. And so your wife is a teacher, and so she's not going to get any Social Security because she's got the Texas retirement system where she did not pay into Social Security.
Exactly.
Okay. And do you know how large her pension will be?
I think it's about $3,400 to $3,900 a month.
Yeah, she's not going to get any Social Security from you. So we can ignore that side of it, unfortunately. Now we just look at you. How long are you going to live?
Good question. Don't know. Uh-huh.
Well, if you have a strong feeling that you're going to make it well into your 80s, 90s, I'd wait a little.
I doubt it.
If you
doubt it because,
take it now.
Okay. Does a month or two make a big difference in the benefits?
No, it makes half a percent a month or so, a little over half a percent a month right now.
Okay.
It's not that big of a deal. Right now, the discount that you're getting, it's about a 7.75% increase for every year you wait. So on a monthly basis, it's, 7/12 of a percent. So it's not a big number.
Okay. Thanks. I think that answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, Shiraz, thank you. Thank you for the call. So
it's not, if somebody's going, it's 8%, Rick, it's 8%. No.
Well,
to full retirement age, it's not the same increase as it is after full retirement age. And so it's similar, but it's not exact.
So his concern, what were his concerns?
Basically? Well, he wants to know when to take Social Security. He's no longer working. He sold his business. He doesn't think that he's going to, have a great life expectancy. He's, average, like the rest of us probably. And if you're an average life expectancy, there's no problem taking it now. Because there's nobody looking to take a survivor benefit from it. That was one of the issues we were looking at. How long will this benefit last? Does it make sense to postpone and give up receiving money now to get a bigger benefit in the future? Well, it takes time for the giving up of money today and getting a higher benefit later to work itself out, to basically recover what you didn't get in the early years. And so the recovery period is about normal life expectancy, 82, 83, 84, depending on some variables that you want to put into this. And so he figured, that's about where I'm going to be. So we're not looking for the benefit to last anything longer than his life, because his wife will not be able to get a benefit from his Social Security because she has a pension from work not covered by Social Security, and she'll be, you know, government pension offsetted right out of her Social Security benefit from as a widow.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard it said, and I don't know whether it's true or not, that it really doesn't matter when you take Social Security, because if you live to your normal life expectancy, you're going to wind up with the same amount.
It's very close to the same number, you know, again, based on certain assumptions, what you could earn on the money by getting it early. And people say, well, I'm not going to earn any money if I take it now. I'm just going to spend it. Right, but that means other money you're not spending. So the money you're basically replacing by taking the Social Security gets to grow. It's one or the other. It's, you know, money is fungible in this respect. So how much can I earn on that money? What are the cost of living allowances going to be? You know, and things of that nature. Somewhat, you know, taxes. Now, if he only sold his business this year, and he's in a very high tax bracket this year because of the sale and other things, then I could wait maybe a year, not a year, but until next January, just to get out of this tax year.
Yeah.
And get a little bit higher benefit and not lose a chunk of it to taxes. But with his wife's pension, he's going to pay tax on it anyway.
Yeah, and again, the government pension offset kicks in right here. You should be aware that if you have a pension, if you're receiving a pension,
or going to receive a pension,
right, and it's one from a job where you did not pay into Social Security. Although actually, I mean, your government pension offset isn't going to affect you until you are taking
the pension.
That pension. You could be taking a spousal benefit starting at age 62, and it won't affect you until you actually receive maybe your pension at age 65.
But most people, they are either working or they start their pension right after they're working when they're in their 60s.
Sometimes. Although, I mean, sometimes you can't start it until you're 65 and you retire before that.
Now, the cousin to the government pension offset is the windfall elimination provision. We've talked about that being a discount to your own benefit of $400. And I had talked to somebody this morning on the phone who was worried about, you know, his wife has a small pension. She worked 20 years in Social Security, only 20. She also has a small pension from a school system where she's going to receive something. He was worried about, he'd heard that the offset was a little over $400, and that is the maximum offset on the Social Security. Her Social Security is expected to be about $800 a month, and he was worried that she was going to lose $400 a month of it, but her pension was only $200. And so there is a caveat in the windfall elimination that the offset can't exceed more than half of the pension. So even though she has a pension, she's not going to lose the whole $400 from her Social Security. Even though she doesn't have enough substantial earning years to offset, it's all about the pension in this case. Worst case scenario, she's going to lose half of whatever the pension is. If her pension actually is $200, she loses $100 on her Social Security.
Yeah, and we should say again, windfall elimination provision does not ever completely eliminate your own benefit.
It eliminates parts of it.
Parts of it. Up to, you know,
at the max,
$413.
Yeah, something
I
like
think
that.
That's what it is, $413. Okay. We are out of time for this hour. I do want to address some of these emails that we got on value averaging, dollar cost averaging. I will do that in the next hour if you can stay tuned for that. If you need the brain trust off the air, talk to Professor Plum, any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors about this. Anything else that we talk about regarding your portfolio, their phone lines are open off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. Bucket Strategy Investing continues. Do not go away.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.